Hey, Bradley Charbonneau here with the Repossible Podcast. Welcome to episode 86. Today I have Louise Wu, and I've got to say, I think she's onto something. So, you know, there's podcasts about make more money and success and whatever. And I get it. We need those things. You know, we need money. I get it. There are important things. But she's into something that I consider a higher level. I call it enlightenment. And I realize that is a huge word and scary and intimidating. And you're like, oh, you know, I need to be on a mountaintop in Nepal or whatever. But Louise is going to get us there more quickly. We don't even have to go to Nepal. And she just has some tricks and strategies up her sleeves to help us reach this sort of inner child of sort of joy and happiness, if I dare use such big words. And I dare do use such big words. This is the Repossible Podcast, after all. It's not the, you know, financial freedom in 5 days podcast. It's just not. It's about bigger, stronger, better, more important, deeper, more meaningful things. And that's why I think Louise is just so on target here with what she's after. I mean, her podcast is called The Recess Life. And for those of you who don't know what recess is, in the United States anyway, it's not lunchtime. It's like brunch, kind of. It's this free time. It's go out and play and go play kickball as a kid in elementary school. So that's what she's kind of saying. Go out and play kickball. So, hey, she also has a free download for us at the, I'll put the link in the show notes, but if you go to louise.repossible.com, louise.repossible.com, you can get her download, which is 7 ways to bring play into your life. She mentions a few of them in our talk, but I can't wait to see the other 5 or 6, because it's just so important. I can't stress it enough. I mean, I think she's just so on it here, and I'm so happy to have her. And I will stop blabbing now and let you hear Louise herself tell us about play. Enjoy. Okay, we're on. And I had to hit record here, Louise, because we were just talking before I hit record and you were just diving into such good stuff that I said, okay, I have to hit record. So I have Louise Wu on the phone, and she has a podcast called The Recess Life. And can you explain recess to people? Because I'm not in the United States anymore. And can you explain recess to people who might not know what recess is? And feel free to do an introduction, because I just jumped in here and I realized I just hit record without giving any kind of introduction. But yeah. I couldn't stop, because you were saying such cool stuff that we will get into. But I'm like, wow, I don't want to miss this.
Well, I appreciate that, Bradley. And I'm so glad to be chatting with you today. Like we talked about before you hit record, it's so nice to always get to connect with you. In person, of course, is always better, but I'll settle for this. So recess traditionally is the activity that happens during school, when kids are in school, in between the learning, in between the learning lessons, in between when the teacher stands up in front of the class and tells you what you're supposed to be learning that day. And then in between, there's recess. And that's when kids go out in the playground and they play with each other. And it's an interesting concept to me, because I think looking at our life as a lifelong recess is really exciting to me, and not just only set aside for certain times in our lives and only certain times in the day. So that's why I named the podcast The Recess Life.
You just said something a little daring there. You said we could have recess like all the time?
Yeah.
Really?
Well, and how
does that work? I mean, I'll raise my hand and say, I want recess all the time. I want playtime all the time. But like the devil's advocate in me is going to say, well, wait a minute here. We need to have some like serious work, and it needs to be difficult and a struggle. And I don't know, I probably got to work harder, and I've got to earn my recess. Play hard, work hard, right?
Absolutely. And I think that's definitely a message that is very strong in our culture, in our society, that recess is frivolous, number one, and that we have to earn it, and that there are more productive things we can be doing. But I'd like to argue that if we can incorporate recess and play into our life on a regular basis in everything we do, we actually will do everything else in life better. And that's the conversation I really want to have around why do we look at life that way, and why is recess and play so separate from our life, and how can we bring it more into our life, and what are the benefits of it?
So kids do it. Like, I've listened to some of your shows, and you've had these super duper experts on, you know, like PhDs in play or something. Mm-hmm. And a lot, like one recently was talking about kids. So kids have no problem with play. I mean, the younger they are, probably the more they play. And I think at some age, they probably don't even know anything but play. But then, so what happens? Why do we stop playing? What do you know, like the mm-hmm. process there, like from kids to adult, or why do we get so serious?
I think it's a number of different things. And I'll just speak from my experience personally. So I grew up in the States, and I come from a first generation family. My parents are immigrants from China, and mm-hmm. just the nature of how they got to this country and the way I was raised, there was really an emphasis on succeeding in life and to create stability for ourselves, because that was challenging for them, just being immigrants. And so it was very much emphasized that we needed to grow up, get a good job, and be serious. And that was the message that we had as we were growing up. And it was also very reinforced in school. In school, it's very much you are trying to get a certain grade in order to move on to the next level. And there's a right way to get to that grade. And it didn't really leave room for exploration, and play was definitely not a part of that equation. Yeah. And I was very playful in nature, I remember growing up. My mom always talks about how I had so much energy as a child. I would run around the house. I would jump on our couches. I broke one of our couches once because I was jumping up and down on it. And like, they didn't know what to do with me. And I loved to sing. I would just sing around the house at the top of my lungs when I was a kid. And I loved to dance. I wasn't able to take dance lessons growing up, but I loved to dance and move. And so it was very much in my nature, but it felt really in conflict with all the messages around me, around I need to eventually grow out of this and join the rest of society and be an adult and be serious. And, you know, I think that was very much, I absorbed that, I think, just like anyone else does when messages around you are so strong. So I think, at least for me, that was why I sort of lost my playful nature as I grew up for a while.
But then you lost your playful nature. But then at some point, I mean, recently, you then decided to get that playful nature back, and you decided to start this podcast. I mean, so were you just playfully, happily, joyfully walking through the dandelion patch, and you decided, oh, I'm going to make a podcast?
Oh, I wish. Yeah. Oh gosh. It was a long journey. And I think I had to experience a lot of questioning and a lot of self-doubt before I got here. You know, I did the thing of getting a full-time job. And I remember just sitting in my job every day, just thinking, is this what life is about? Is this what we're all working so hard to do, is just get an office job and every day is the same thing and that's it. And I felt very confused. I didn't understand what all that work was for, to just live a life that was very, you know, mundane, so to speak. And I had at that point dabbled in a couple creative things. I actually, because I was never able to take dance growing up as a child, I incorporated dance classes into my elective classes in college, because you have to take a certain amount of electives in college. And I thought, okay, well, I might as well take dance, because I have to take a class anyway. And that was my first experience really with dance, not until I was an adult. But then once I graduated college, I didn't know what to do. I was like, okay, how do I engage this creative nature I felt very lost. Yeah. So it was a journey. I started just trying a bunch of different things, because I was able to be on my own now. I started taking dance classes as an adult. I moved to San Francisco and started taking dance classes, and I stumbled through a lot of dance classes very, very clumsily. There were people that had been dancing since they were, you know, a child, and I had only started as an adult. I started.
So even though you're in dance, you're not yet at the level of play. You're
right.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there was very much that was a mental block I had to get over around. I'm never going to be as good as anyone in this class, in the classes I take. So should I even start? And it was very challenging to get over that block. And I remember one day when I was, before I had even started taking these dance classes, and I was still ruminating over that block. I was playing a game with some friends in San Francisco, and it was a game where we were playing, where we had to draw cards and answer questions that were on the cards. And one of the questions was, if you only had a year to live, what would you do with your time? And without even thinking, I said, oh, I would take dance classes every week. Wow. And I had friends look at me and go, well, why aren't you doing that now? And it was just this moment of, why am I not doing that now?
Wow.
And so I started taking dance classes very clumsily. And that was about 10 years ago. And I'm still not great. I'm still not perfect in my classes by any means. But it brings me such joy now. And it started me on this path, I would say, of just opening myself up to experiences and to seeing play more around me and opportunities for play around me. Wow. And so it's been, I will say, just the journey that it's taken me on, it's opened me up to connections and relationships. It's opened me up to better relationships in my work, better, just a better way of being. And I started incorporating it into some very, very fun, interesting ways in my life. I started having all my birthday parties are play-based. I've done everything from going to a trampoline gym and telling all my friends that we're just going to come and jump on trampolines for an hour and a half. I did a murder mystery type birthday party a couple years ago. And so just incorporating it in a little bit in little ways in my life. And it's opened me up to so much that because of that, I had just started having more conversations with people about play and what brings them joy and what creatively stirs their soul. And so that really just brought me to the podcast. But I will say it's been a long journey to get here. I definitely did not walk through daffodils one day and decide to start a podcast, but it's a conversation I want to have more of. It's changed my life in so many ways. And I hope that, you know, others will come along for the ride.
You know, you said something I think really important. You said you've been doing dance lessons for 10 years, but you're still not perfect. So many people might say, well, you're not perfect yet, so you don't have the right to call that play. It's still work until you're perfect or something. I have a chapter in one of my books called Practice is Perfect. Because I try to turn it around, right? And because I think it sounds like you have elevated to the point where it's okay if you're not perfect. And I mean, perfection is kind of a myth anyway, but you are now, do you believe you are playing when you're dancing? Are you at that level when you're dancing?
Mm-hmm. So it is, and that's what is really great about putting yourself in situations where you may or may not, where you have the opportunity to decide, are you going to play or are you going to make this about perfection? And wow. That's what I love about this practice. And I love that you use that phrase, practice is perfect. Oh my gosh, that's so profound. Yeah, when you are putting yourself in a situation where you may not be perfect, you have the opportunity to mindfully decide, what do I want to make this about? And
okay, but I'm going to interrupt you again because you just said you can decide. So is it our choice whether or not we say, you just said, I'm going to make this, you know, strive towards perfection, or I'm going to play. So do we have a say in the matter? Is it like a mindset? We do. Okay. Wow.
Yeah, absolutely.
So we don't have to wait. We don't have to wait for the daffodil patch that arrives in our life magically with pixie dust.
No, it's always a choice. Okay. And it's always going to be a practice in choosing that. And there's some days where it's going to be hard to choose that. But to put yourself in that place where you always have that opportunity to practice that, I think is one of the best things you can do for yourself as a human for yourself. So absolutely. And there are days definitely when, so in a lot of my dance classes, we will get split up into smaller groups after we learn the routine. Yeah. And in those smaller groups, we have to dance it in front of everyone else. And there are days still where all of a sudden my mind freezes and I will stumble through the dance and I'll have done it just fine throughout the whole class. And then I have to get in front of everyone and it's so much harder. And having to practice that compassion on myself and is a practice 100%. And funnily enough, when I approach dancing in a small group and I approach it more as play, I actually end up performing the routine better than if I was like, okay, now I'm in front of everyone and I have to do it perfectly. And oh my gosh, everyone's watching me. I end up doing worse. But if I approach it as play and as lightly and carefree as I can, I actually end up doing better. So what an opportunity.
I think that is so profound because I think that's one of our biggest struggles is, and it's the typical try harder, try harder, try harder, and it's just not working. Or it's sort of the conscious and the subconscious, like you're at the ATM, at the bank teller machine thing, and you can't remember your PIN code. And you're trying your hard. You're trying. I know what it is. No, I know what it is. Oh, let me try again. Just a sec. And you look behind you and there's people behind you. There's a line forming. Like, I know it. I got to know this thing. Come on, just give me a sec. Think harder, think harder, think harder. And you're like, I don't know it. I don't know it. You walk away and two steps away, there, you know, a bird flies by, a car zooms by, whatever. And you're like, oh, I know what it is. And I think that's similar to the try harder, try harder, try harder. And oh no, I have all the people in front of me. Now it's even more important. Now I need to do my absolute best. And your mind is just so busy with all these other factors. Whereas like the secret is sort of this, I mean, when you were talking, I almost thought of the word, this is a pretty big word, but enlightenment. And I see, and again, correct me if I'm wrong, but that's kind of how I really hold the word play. It's one reason I really wanted to talk with you, because I hold this word play really high. It's right up there with enlightenment. In fact, it could be, in my opinion, it kind of could be enlightenment. That's why I have like a 9-book series, and I have one of the books is called Play, and it's way up there. It's far down the path of, you know, other books. I mean, I have one book called Decide. I mean, that doesn't sound like fun at all, right? Ugh, decide, decision-making. Oh, terrible. But play, that's, it's sort of intriguing. Yeah. But do you see it like that? Is it like a mindset or a level of mind? Or how do you see it like for adults? Because the kids, they don't even think about it. They just live it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Ooh, gosh, enlightenment. That sounds so serious to me.
Yeah, sorry. Well, and I hope enlightenment. Yeah, you're right. It does sound kind of serious. And like, oh, I have to, you know, be a monk and study in like Nepal for 9 years and sit on a mountaintop. But I don't, you know, I've heard like those monks and those sort of serious dudes who are up there on the top of the mountain. I've heard they're pretty funny. I can hear they're like, they joke and they're silly and.
Oh, I could believe that.
Which is kind of cool.
It's funny because one of my guests that I had on my podcast, Adam Rosendahl, he runs a company called Late Night Art, where they take a creative art-based experience into companies to teach teams a better connection using the arts. And they bring in art supplies and paper and prompts and questions for people to draw. And it's very facilitated. It's beautiful. But we had a conversation during our conversation. He talked about just how there are certain leaders out there that they just walk into a room and you are just blown away by their light. And they are also the leaders that are, he used the term, on the edge of laughter. And and that was so interesting to me because he was talking, so the examples that we could think of were like the Dalai Lama, Desmond Tutu. And these are people that are profoundly deep people that have changed the world, that have just a depth of knowledge about issues in this world and the things that are ailing our society, but they have such a lightness and a playfulness to them in a way that you're like, how can you be like this, knowing everything that you know and seeing everything that you've seen? And in some ways, I look at them and I say, you are absolutely enlightened and you are, but you're also equally playful also. So I think there is something to that around how can we achieve this level of openness and depth.
Like lightness.
Yes, and at the same time, you say lightness. Depth and lightness.
Yeah, ooh, depth and lightness. Ooh,
yeah, how do we get together.
That? Yes, and, oh, wow.
Yeah.
Sounds like so contradictory, right? But
it does. It does. And I'd like to think that play can be a way we can achieve that. So yeah, I think there's something to that, you know?
Depth and lightness together through play. Wow. I think I see a subtitle for a future book of yours.
Oh, okay. Let's do it.
Hey, wow. Hey, you've interviewed all these, it seems like all ranges of people. What's been something, what sticks out? Like what comes to mind as like, ooh, that was interesting, or ooh, I didn't know that. Anything come to mind like that kind of you think?
It's been such a joy so far, and everyone has been, I'm just so blown away by these people. Gosh, it's everything from as simple as one of my guests from this past season, of the season that I'm working on right now, his name's Andrew Evans, and he's a magician. And he started doing magic shows out of his backyard in San Francisco. And he grew such a following and they would sell out so quickly. And he was doing shows so frequently that he eventually had to take them out of his backyard because he was starting to get in trouble with the city of San Francisco. And ended up opening up a space. Yeah. Ended up finding an old Metro PCS store and turning it into a theater. And now runs his shows out of there. The front entrance of the theater is going to be a candy shop that people can visit during the day. And he's absolutely wonderful. And just talking to him about how he became this way, I said, how have you always been this whimsical? And he would just talk about how when he was a kid, he just was always obsessed with the funniest things. He was obsessed with Mount St. Helens for a little bit of time and snakes and car washes. He loved the car washes that you drive through where the wispy blue brushes are hitting your cars. He was fascinated by that. And his parents were so encouraging of that. And they even they even got the car wash operator to stop the car wash operation so that they could like walk around and look at it. And so his parents were always so so encouraging of that. And he was never made to feel too silly or oh, eventually you'll grow out of this and you should grow out of this. And now he's running a theater where he performs his magic shows out of, and he's also a magic consultant for the Harry Potter and the Cursed Child play that's playing in San Francisco right now. Yeah. And so I just look at people like that, and I think it just reinforces this idea that if you keep a spirit of play in your life, and that it's encouraged. So if you're a parent, you know, encourage your child to be playful and to pursue their passions, because you don't know where it's going to end up. And it may be wilder than your imagination that you had.
Yeah.
So I look at that and that inspires me. And then getting to talk to people that actually have a really strong academic knowledge around play and creativity and its benefits. I just had a conversation with a gentleman. He's based out of England, and his episode's not out yet, but he was a dancer growing up, but was never, and he loved dance growing up, but was not good at school. He couldn't read until he was in his 20s. And it wasn't until he really started studying the benefits of dance and creativity on the brain that he really saw, okay, I learned to dance because I learned to be creative, because he was a dancer and he was only able to teach himself to read once he started incorporating some of his mindset that he had around dance. And he was able to learn how to read in his 20s because of that, and ended up getting a PhD in psychology, and now has a lab where they study how dance can affect the brain, and is all this research coming out about how dance can help people with Parkinson's and all these health benefits. And so it's just really reinforcing my hypothesis around play and creativity being important as a lifelong practice, everything from the personal side of things all the way to how it can really change the world, I think. So that's what I'm learning.
Well, I'm with you on the change the world thing, because that's, you know, and of course you and I probably don't dare to say, oh, I'm going to change the world, but still, I think we change the world like one person at a time. And like right now with my Spark project, with, you know, writing books together with kids, what's often happening is, so for, I think I've told you about this, but I'm running a month-long sort of workshop, sort of a challenge, where we're going to write a book, a very short kid's book, in a month, a parent and a kid. And it might be an uncle and a niece, or a dad and a son, or whatever. And what's been happening is, speaking of play, is that, you know, we got serious uncle, or we got, you know, I'm the rule abiding mom. And then they got playful kid, and the playful kid wants to tell this certain story, and mom has to let go a little. And I just had this the other week with one of the moms in my program, and she said, you know, I have to let her tell her story. I'm being too adult about it. It's supposed to be a kid's story. Yeah. And that's like the serious adult getting in the way of the play of the kid. And the beauty of it is that, guess who wins that battle? The kid. Because it's, who wants to say, no, no, daughter, we must make this serious, professional, and boring, and, you know, terrible. Whereas, of course, the parent is like, wow, look at that. I get to play a little more because my daughter has this more playful attitude. So she wins. And we're going to, I need to rise up. I need to elevate. You know, you and I talked a while back, and you gave me this word elevate. I think I told you this, but that word has been with me. It's almost like a contender for a book title. But the mom has to elevate her game, her mindset, her thinking to the playfulness of her daughter. And and that's sort of where I get back to this, sort of the enlightened idea of this higher level of thinking, where you're not concerned with, you know, silly stuff like professionalism and PhDs and all that adult stuff. and mm-hmm. you're telling a story or you're playing a game, or it's light. And yeah. there's a beauty in that, that children know better than we do, and we can learn from them.
Yeah. And, I love that you're doing that, Bradley.
And
that
yeah.
it's that container for that magic to happen.
Yeah.
And yeah. And just helping to create that, to make space for a little bit of humility, I think, because
yes.
I think as we grow up, we think, oh, we know everything now. And and this is how life should be, and everything yeah. is black and white. And, but getting back into that childlike state of mind is to actually, to get away from that,
yeah.
to say, I don't know everything anymore. And to be open to other possibilities, and getting to that space. And you're really creating that by organizing these workshops so that these adults can get back to that childlike state of mind by actually working with a child. So that's yeah. just so neat, Bradley.
Well, they're kind of, it's, I mean, we've kind of gone around this idea, but they're like allowed to play because, oh, well, I'm doing this book with my daughter, so that's why it's really silly and fun and playful.
Yeah.
But, if I were working on a book on my own, oh, it would be terribly serious and professional and boring as all get out. But you know what's so cool is that you have this topic that is so, you know, forward thinking and positive. I mean, no wonder people are just attracted to you and to the topic and want to talk about it, because it's a wonderful, joyous thing you're doing. And I mean, yeah. your podcast is not about like tax law.
No. I'm sure there's a way to make that playful, but I won't even, right? But
it might take the magician.
Yeah.
But it's just such an uplifting topic. And that's just, it's such a breath of fresh air. It's just a lovely thing you're doing.
Very kind, Bradley. Yeah. That's very kind. I think it's, at least for me, a topic I will never get tired of talking about and exploring yeah. and looking at all the different angles and perspectives of. So, I'm enjoying it so far, and yeah, I hope others will enjoy the journey as well. But it's been a joy.
You know, one thing I think listeners can take away is you said something. It kind of not shocked me, but it was kind of just eye opening. You said you can choose. You can decide to like have this playful mindset or not about a certain event. You know, yeah. Like you said, dance. I'm going to make this dance. This is going to be playful.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said, you're probably, chances are you're going to do better. So that's so applicable to so many people in so many situations.
For sure.
Where they got, oh, I've got this important presentation at work. Oh, it's got to be serious and top of the line and the greatest of all time. And who knows, they might struggle, but if they
you can make anything playful. You can make anything playful.
Yeah.
And yeah, the guest that I just had on, he is 75 years old, and he's a research professor at Boston College. And you know, I asked him about how do we kind of maintain that playfulness, and yeah, he talked about just you can make anything playful. Like, you know, let's say you work on an assembly line, even for your job, how can you make a game out of it? How can you try to beat your previous time and pretend you're an Olympic athlete competing in this activity? So if you can make even the most mundane of things playful, then you can really do that with anything. And it is just a mindset, a practice for sure. Yeah, there are days where it's not going to feel that way, but it is a choice. It is a choice.
Wow. It's one of those, it sounds so easy. And like the secret is, well, it kind of is.
Yeah.
We just make it hard.
We do.
Make it seem like unattainable. Like, oh yeah, that playful person. Oh, I wish I could be like that.
Yeah.
And
there is a lot of pressure in our culture and our society to become serious and for play to go away. So I think it is challenging. I'm not going to say that it is easy,
right.
But it is, because it is hard. And so you really do have to carve that time for yourself. And that can be the most radical thing you can do, is to make a stand for yourself and say, you know, I am going to choose this because no one else is going to choose it for me.
Yeah.
And if I'm not going to wait for my external circumstances to change, whether that is, you know, your job or someone getting on your nerves, what can I do to change myself on the inside? And that is always up to you. And it's going to be a practice, but yeah, it can be up to you.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good. It can be up to you. Mm-hmm. It's your choice. Wow. Hey, where can people find you? Where can people find your podcast? Is it just sort of everywhere podcasts are sold?
Yeah. Yeah. So it's called The Recessed Life. It's on all the podcast platforms. I also do have the video interviews on YouTube as well. So you can search for
YouTube. Oh, neat.
Yeah. And you can follow along on Instagram at The Recessed Life. I post fun little clips from the interviews and little tips and fun things I find about play that I post on there. So you can find me on any of those platforms.
Wow. Okay. Oh, great. It's been great talking with you, Louise. This is just,
such a pleasure.
It's a walk through the dandelion patch right there. We're getting there.
Oh, likewise. And yeah. I'm so excited about what you're doing in this world. And I think you are such an example of being playful in your life, and you are creating and cultivating those spaces for that to happen. And I think that's why we have connected so well. We met
too.
What, like 5 years? I don't know.
I don't know. A long time.
Right. And we met at a meetup where I've met thousands of people at meetups, right. And I don't stay in that's touch right. with everybody. Right. So there's something about this, about your spirit. I know that I've just gravitated towards. So I'm so glad we crossed paths and have stayed in touch.
Too. Me too. Great. Okay, Louise. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Bradley.
Okay. And we'll talk soon. Thanks, talk everybody. Soon. Go play. Hey there, just a reminder to go to louise.repossible.com to get her download with 7 easy ways to add more play into your life. And check out her podcast, The Recessed Life. She's on there and she interviews lots of people talking about play, gets all kinds of perspectives, you know, broader and bigger and deeper and different. And it's fascinating, the people who get into play. And if you think about it, it's such a positive topic. And she's interviewing people talking about play. I mean, we're not talking about like tax law. Sorry, I always use tax law example. All right, that's it. Louise.repossible.com. Check it out. Go get her download. And I'll see you next week.